The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
The National University MFA program is a fully online creative writing program with no residency requirement. Genre fiction friendly, horror, sci-fi, fantasy, young adult. Work with horror sci-fi faculty like Lee Thomas and John Coyne. Focus in fiction, creative nonfiction, poetry, or screenwriting. All screenwriting faculty are active Hollywood professionals. Since 2005, the National University Online MFA program has helped working adults learn the craft of creative writing. Join an alumni network of more than 1,000 graduates. Get the idea in your head on the page. National University is an accredited not-for-profit university. Explore more at www.nu.edu. Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Monster Attack, the podcast dedicated to old monster movies. And we have got a classic for you today. We've been promising this one for quite a while. I know that some of the listeners have been saying, Jim, when are you going to do the creature one again? Well, we're going to do it today. And we've got Madeline with us in the house. Come on board, Madeline, and say hey to everybody.
Hello!
God, it seems like a lifetime ago that we talked about Creature from the Black Lagoon. I can't even remember how long ago it's been.
Rewatching this movie, I was like, God, that seems like forever. So let's not have that long of a delay.
Yeah, we did a couple of movies in between that. I think we snuck in like a couple of other movies before we got to Revenge. So it does seem like it's been quite a while. But
here we are.
That's right. And folks, we do have plans to do the third one somewhere down the road, probably in the next 5 years. No, not a lot sooner than that. But we will do the next one. But today we're doing number two, The Revenge of the Creature. And I sat down to watch this again last night. So I've had a couple of viewings of it in the last month or so. And I tell you what, I have mixed feelings about this movie. So I'll say that right up front. As far as, and I don't know, I know you're a big fan of the creature as well. As a kid growing up, I loved the whole creature thing. He's one of the coolest monsters that anyone ever created. And I still think one of Jack Arnold's best. But this was not my favorite of the three. So I'll just be sort of honest on that one. But it's not a bad movie. I thought it was the weakest of the three.
I don't think it's a bad movie, but I think where it falls a little bit short is that a lot of it seems repeated. And I think at the time, that was the overbearing remarks as far as like the critical reviews was that it was quite similar. So
yeah,
we'd already seen this story before.
I mean, right from the opening, it's almost like they used the same opening shots from Creature from the Black Lagoon. You got Rita too. You got Lucas blowing the horn and the alligator jumping in the water and all that. It's like, wait a minute.
But yes, haven't we seen this? All that stuff was previously used. And there are some shots that are completely recycled. And yeah. Some of the music is recycled from their library, the Universal Library.
Yeah, that I can live with.
Yeah, no big deal.
That piece of music that they used in Creature and these other films is such a classic monster movie score. And they used it in so many of other films that, that blaring horn when the monster is, approaching the screen and all that stuff. As a kid, I loved that. I mean, that signaled, okay, good stuff's getting ready to happen. But let's talk a little bit about the cast, because this is something as a kid that, again, I'm going to say I'm a little mixed on this one, because We talked about this with Creature from the Black Lagoon. I absolutely was in love with Julie Adams. Who wasn't? Oh my God. I mean, she was just the best thing of that movie. And so she's not in this one. And I think I was, you know, as a kid, it's like, oh man, I'd like to have her back. You know, isn't there some way they could have made her come back into this movie? But I'm a huge fan of John Agar.
I do like Laurie Nelson. I think she's awesome. She was friends with Julie Adams.
Yes, they were. They were very good friends. Yeah,
they were all on the same, back in the day when you signed contracts, you were just hanging out with all your actor friends all the time. You were all on the same lot and training together and doing all that. So it sounds awesome. I think she was very hesitant to take this role since at the time it just like TV and B movies, that the science fiction, I think forever was considered a B movie. So she was not too thrilled about getting this role. I think it is the role she is known for. She did a lot of other.
Oh, I think so. Yeah. Movies, I think this is her signature role. Yeah.
But, this is the film that really, became a cult following for her. And I think what booked her at a lot of, certainly conventions and things after retiring from performing, which I don't know if she still does it. She's still alive, but I don't know if she still does conventions and things like that. But she did with her husband for many years.
Yeah. She's 85 years old. And I think she is retired from the convention circuit, but she would be one of those people I'd like to meet. Absolutely.
Oh, certainly. I was thinking that since we're showing the creature. Since Revenge of the Creature for Monsterama this year, I was like, still doing this. This would be a great one to get her in.
Is she still living in New Mexico or out in that area or in LA?
That's where she was born. And she, I think, was just very happy to retire and raise her children. And I don't know if her husband is still alive, but she, I think is still living in New Mexico.
The last actual performance that she did was in 2005 in a crazy little movie that I didn't know anything about, but when I saw it on her resume, I hunted it down. I have a copy of it.
And,
one of my listeners sent me a copy of this movie, The Naked Monster.
It's different.
It's not a porno film or anything like that. It's a funny spoof, and it has all of the classic monster movie people in it, like Kenneth Toby and those guys. It has virtually all of the people from like Creature from the Black Lagoon in it that were still alive. Had John Agar. It was one of his last films. This is a little misleading because I think John Agar had died actually, or maybe it was Kenneth Toby. I think Kenneth Toby had died just before this movie was released.
No, I think John Agar did die after this was the last thing he did.
Yeah. A lot of this was just, some old film work for them or whatever. There was some, I think it was Kenneth Toby where they had to, sort of fake up some stuff to make it, because I think he died during the production, if I'm not mistaken, during that time period. So they had to get very creative. Apparently, this movie took a long time to make, but it was sort of a love.
I imagine because they had all these actors, and they had Forrest J. Ackerman. Like they had everything. Yep.
It was a great mix of the old people and the contemporary people, because they had, you know, one of the big screen queens. Brink Stevens was in it. And the thing I got a kick out of was that Laurie Nelson played a character by the name of Dr. Helen Dobson, which was the name of her character in Revenge of the Creature. So they did that throughout that whole crazy movie.
Got everybody to do this.
So the only reason I went off on that, tangent was because, this is clearly Revenge. I agree with you. I think this is Laurie Nelson's signature film. I think that's what we all remember her for. And, I think the only thing as a kid, again, I don't want to be critical of Laurie because I really do love her. I mean, I really do. And I watched her in a lot of TV stuff. She did. I mean, she worked steady, you know, for many, many years, right up until the late, almost to 2000, then a little break before she did this crazy movie, Naked Monster. But I think it was her voice that got to me a little bit as a kid, because she sounded like a little girl, you know, and it was like, it threw me a little bit.
She was incredibly young. She didn't have she didn't strike somebody who had smoked cigarettes. She seemed like a pretty healthy lady.
Yeah, that's right.
So I don't think she ever had the, her voice, her vocals always stayed in that sort of soprano type cadence.
Yeah, she was only like 21 years old when she shot this. I mean, she's barely 21 when she shot it.
She and Riku Browning are quite young when they're doing this. So she started when she was incredibly young. I think
4 years old.
3 years old.
4 years old.
Starting dance and that kind of thing, and her mother really got her into, just like any mother, just trying to get their child into something that is an activity and that sort of thing. And she must have had a natural, I mean, certainly it's obvious on screen, but a natural affinity and
I think so.
Really comfortable.
She was considered like another Shirley Temple. They were sort of almost visualizing her, the studio, as another like Shirley Temple at that age.
Yes. And speaking of Shirley Temple, that was John Agar. That was
his wife.
Shirley Temple. but when she was quite young, I guess they were testing her for a lot of different roles, but she looked young. And she took a break for high school and then essentially went through this kind of all testing sort of thing again and then signed a 7-year contract with Universal.
With Universal, yeah.
And right. And then they put her on loan or something like that for RCA or something. Or I forget. Something like that. They put her on loan. They loaned her out. And that's where she learned how to use the Aqualung, which in a lot of the scenes, that is Lori Nelson with her doing the Aqualung. Ginger Rogers did a lot of it as well. But Lori did quite a bit of her underwater scenes.
Yeah, I think Ginger did the... She did sort of the more dangerous stunts, but the scenes in the underground, in the tank, at the aquarium and stuff like that. Yeah, that was all Lori Nelson. That was all her.
Yeah, which I thought was really cool because not all the time would the actor do their stunts. I mean, now it's very much required unless you have the appropriate training. But I thought that was neat. And how cool of her to do that sort of thing. That was, I mean, it's quite risky.
So, yeah.
And I was reading about this. I didn't know that Tom Hennessy was swept away in an undertow.
Yes, he nearly got killed. Yeah, he nearly got killed during the the scene at the end of it. Folks, we're going to be jumping all over this on the storyline, so don't worry about that. But yeah, near the end of the movie where he's in the suit and he grabs Lori and jumps into the water to take her off near the end of the movie. There was some kind of undercurrent they weren't expecting that, he was saved by a couple of people out in a boat who were watching the filming.
Totally unrelated. He really would have died.
He would have.
Because what they did, because that suit was so buoyant, is they would weight it down.
Yep.
And he really, I'm sure, was, it's one of those things where you just get so lucky and not your day to die.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because they said it was very waterlogged and, it was definitely, it would have dragged him right out into the ocean, under there. He never would have been able to get to the surface or whatever. But it's funny that it was like a couple of kids, I think they're like teenagers, they were out in a boat watching the filming and said, uh-oh, something's not right here. Of course, he let go of Lori. So that she was able to get away. But, like you said, somebody was smiling on him that day. That was crazy.
That's wild.
I didn't realize until I read. That's right. I didn't realize until I started researching this that Riku wasn't originally going to be in this, that they had actually brought somebody else in. Yeah, I couldn't believe, and I still, to this day, I can't understand why they were treating Riku like this.
Right. Well, and that's movie, that yeah. That's big picture stuff for you. They were going to use John Lamb, and when they shot for 2 days with him, and they were this is not going to work, and called Riku back in, and who had such a natural, great, I mean, this guy, he's a fish.
Absolutely.
Moved so gracefully in the water and made such an interesting movement with the creature that you really can suspend your disbelief of the entire creature embodiment. But this is, I mean, it really seems like an otherworldly creature. He moves in such an interesting manner that it doesn't seem like a guy in a suit.
Oh, he's incredible. Yeah, you totally believe it. And I think if you study this film, you can pick up the scenes where they did keep some of the scenes that they shot with Lamb.
They did.
And it's obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, you can really tell that there's
he's
huge
just
difference.
Kind of disjointed.
Right.
That's,
right.
I mean, and not everybody can be Riku Browning. So that's, that's just the way it is.
But at least, you know, and he,
I didn't realize he was such a, that he smoked so much. He was like, from the age of 19, was smoking anywhere from 1 to 2 packs a day, and then all the way up to 5 packs a day.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, this guy could still hold his breath for 5 minutes. Like,
And that's what people did that back then. I don't know how they did it. I really don't. I mean, I came in on the tail end of the generation where everybody smoked. And people know I was a smoker for many years, and it caused me all kinds of problems. I don't know how they could do it because, you know, just you just don't have any breath at all. But I there were a lot of athletes that did it. I remember as a kid in high school going to professional basketball games, and after the game, you know, some of these big-time players smoking like a chimney. You know, it's like, how can you do that? But that was society back.
Yeah.
They died young. That's unfortunately what happened, was people died a lot younger than but Riku, we met him a couple of years ago, and the guy looks like he could strap the suit on and jump back in again.
He's what an incredible guy. This one, he actually makes it into a scene, which there's the where you actually see him in his normal non-Gillman look. He's giving the when he is pulling the blood sample from the shark. And
Right.
Laura, so he is essentially filling the test tube with he fills the syringe and then puts the blood into the test tubes. And that's the only
I'm wondering, you know, because he made a big deal about getting a credit this time, because he didn't get a credit in the first film, which I thought was just terrible. I mean, we talked about that. It's like, how can they not give this guy a credit? And I'm wondering, is that, maybe that was their justification? Okay, give him a scene so we can justify giving him a credit or something. I mean, I don't know what Universal was thinking with this guy. I really don't.
Well, that was not the first time, people not getting credits. And I guess our most famous non-credit would be Clint Eastwood. Who
I knew you were
going
to go there. I was trying to, good segue. That's where we were headed.
This was not rehearsed.
That's right. And that I did as a kid when I first saw this
little scene. It's kind of dumb, but it's a cute scene.
It's hilarious.
Scene.
I don't even know what, you know, and to this day, I don't know why it's in there. They, I mean, it's,
I don't,
I, and all they're
the
establishing.
Script was even worse. Yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit of an establishment of John Agar. He's an animal psychologist. It's, you can tell it's a light scene, you know, it's sort of cutesy. The music's cutesy. And you've got this great scene with the cat and three rats. It's supposed to be four. And I think Clint Eastwood has the best line in this whole movie, where he says something to the effect of, I think the fourth subject is in the stomach of our cat, or something or other, something crazy like that. Then he finds the rat in his pocket. But, I was waiting for him to, you know, I thought when he, the last time I saw this, I was waiting for him to go into the pocket and pull out a gun and say, go ahead, make my day. But that didn't happen.
Oh, man, that would be great.
But nobody knew Dirty Harry back then. So it was fun in high school to go back, and I'd read that in a film book, and I said, Clint Eastwood was in that movie. I don't remember that. And going back and watching it, going, oh, my God, there he was, you know. Because I didn't watch Rawhide as a kid, not until later. I watched that later in the reruns. So I didn't know who Clint Eastwood was when I saw this movie. And what a kick. That's the fun part about these old monster movies, when you go back and see some of these actors who have
get
really
big. Yeah,
everyone
got credits. That was just kind of the way it was. And
that's right.
The other I thought was interesting is our first scenes with the establishing of locating the creature, and then
right
on the Rita 2, not the Rita 1, because we couldn't have the Rita 1 anymore.
No, but, yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of boats with the name 2 in them in this movie, if you've noticed. Of course, Rita 1, yeah, suffered a bad fate.
Yeah, but the. And then at the end, there's the Porpoise 3, and I was like, I don't remember Porpoise 1 or 2.
There was a Porpoise. No, there was a Porpoise 2. There was a Porpoise 2.
Okay.
That was. It's about halfway. It's the boat that brings them to Ocean Harbor is a Porpoise 2.
Oh, yeah.
Because I got thinking, right. What happened to 2? There's 3. I mean, it's like, okay, what's going on? Because the one that takes them to the lobster house is 3.
Correct.
So, yeah, they probably thought, I can imagine the producers saying, no one's going to notice that. Don't worry about it. But, you know,
well, those producers really were thinking William Allen was really, I think this was the first movie, like before it was even done, they were already thinking about the sequels, which was
absolutely.
This picture was really what established that.
Absolutely.
They left William Allen basically that ending was left open so that they could have these sequels. And
yes.
That was, there was a rewrite before the picture was completed so that we didn't know if the creature really was dead or alive. And then that's the exact same final shot at the end of this movie.
It is. Yeah.
They
used
the same.
And again, that as a kid, that jumped out at me. I said, wait a minute, that's the same thing we saw in the first one. You know, it's the same recycled shot. So the question is, was that Rico? Was that Rico? Was that him dying? And I don't know who was in the suit during that shot.
I don't, because that one is from Florida.
Because it's from Florida, yeah. From Creature from the Black Lagoon.
That one was all, any of the underwater where we're looking up.
That was all him.
And we see all the plant life and that kind of thing. That's all Florida. That's all, and that one was from, I'm pretty sure from Wakulla Springs, but I don't know. I'm not.
Yes, I believe so.
Aspect.
Yeah, I believe that's where they did almost all the underwater work for that movie. So this movie is.
So a lot of this for this film was Marineland, which a lot of the actors remarked how much fun it was to make this movie, including.
Oh, yeah. It's a fun place.
Really enjoyed this because they flew. And this didn't happen in the first movie. Not all the actors. It was really just Stubbles made it to Florida.
Right.
And in this film, a lot of them made it to Florida and had a good time. But they having grown up on the West Coast, they were not used to the southern humidity and temperature. And they got in the summertime, so I can imagine that was pretty tough on these nice dry heat trained actors.
And plus, the nice thing about this movie for Florida, again, you know, back during this time, there weren't many movies shooting in Florida. And the ones that were not sort of up to par, should I say. I mean, Florida had a reputation. Florida had the same reputation that Georgia did, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, that if you wanted to shoot like a grade Z film, go to Georgia or go to Florida. But this one, this one not only shot a lot of marine land, they went up to Jacksonville. They sort of got around on this one. So I think the folks of Florida sort of had as much fun with this film as the audience did.
Oh, yeah. And that really, it's sometimes, you know, and you've made movies like this where you just go to a place and it just, that period of time where you're with your other actors and that crew and it just becomes such a fun chapter in your life of movie making. I say this all the time about when I made Spring Break Zombie Massacre in Providence, Rhode Island.
Right.
That is a summer I could relive forever.
Absolutely.
That was one of my favorite productions I ever did. And that was just one of those things where it was just a great group of people. Everybody was fun. We had a great time. And that's really how I feel from what I've read, that the actors and the crew and the director felt about this film.
Well, and I think you feel it. Yeah, I think you feel it watching the movie. I mean, so like, you know, for all the criticisms this movie gets, and folks, you know, let's be honest here. Creature came out in 54. This came out in 55. And then Creature Walks Among Us in 56. So there wasn't much time between these movies being released. And yeah, there's some parts of the story that feel a little rushed. You know, I mean, they really cranked this out pretty fast. I think that spirit that you're talking about that was on set and stuff, you feel it in the movie. I think it saves the movie. I think it really makes it, because this is a fun movie to watch. I've always loved it as a kid, you know, as far as watching it.
It's fun, and it's still, plenty of fans are still out there watching it. It's
absolutely.
Before I did this podcast, I had no problem watching it four times in a row. So
that's right. That's right.
Just trying to see if I got any nuanced things. It's fun. And yeah, you don't have to pay attention the entire time, but these movies, these types of movies were not, I think mostly you would enjoy this kind of thing multiple times, where you go to the drive-in and you go to the theater and you'd go have, when you weren't really watching television all the time, because likely you didn't have a TV at your house, so you had to go out to hang out. And these movies were not meant to be these like all-encompassing focus all your attention. You could check out in there and you still had a complete idea of the story, and you enjoyed it, and fun things happened, and it's entertaining. Entertaining.
And this film was released on a double bill with Cult of the Curlboro. And it wasn't Cult was the primary film, and this was the secondary film on the double bill. So, you know,
it was.
Looked
really with it. I didn't realize which one was the primary. Well, there's that too. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and to reference what you said about it being a rushed production, what I thought was interesting was what I was going to segue into about that, the initial shot with the Rita 2 and those scenes, that was a different director. That was Joseph Petri or whatever his name was. I forgot his last name, but he,
The second unit.
He did that scene. What was the overbearing remark about the film is that scene was well after the picture was wrapped. And when they went through editing, it was so rushed, like all of a sudden the creature is at the tank and the end where dealing with the creature, that there was not much exposition, and it felt rushed. So they added this scene in there to give some exposition to the story, which I thought was fascinating. The director, he was never credited as well.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. That
happened a lot back then with like second unit people and stuff like that. They didn't get much credit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you look at the credits from a lot of these films from the mid 50s, they're very short. You know, it's not like it is today where everybody gets in the credit line. The contract system back then was a lot different too, because it's sort of the thing, like if you give them a credit, that means there's a deal with residuals and stuff like that, and it was that a lot of that legality has been hammered out now, so it's a little more fair to the people involved with these films. But yeah, back then it was pretty brutal. You might get in, you might not. You never know.
Yeah. So I guess that's why you have these different guilds to protect your actors.
That's
so that they are credited correctly. It's a tough business.
Well, I think the one thing that stands out the most in this film, and it's something we've talked about a lot with films, and we've done a lot of films together that deal in this time period, in this period of the 50s, you can't get around the sexism in this film. I mean, you've got John Agar putting the moves on Lori Nelson, almost like
don't have a voice.
Yeah, the second he meets her. I mean, it's like, oh, my God.
And, yeah, it's just kind of, well, it's the 50s. I don't, well before. It's just, it is what it is. That it is a time capsule of what the perceived position of a woman in society. Yeah.
All of the come ons and all that, and of course it takes her like 10 minutes to fall for it, and then boom, all of a sudden, you know, it's like,
it's a movie.
Yeah, I always got a kick out of
it's
that though. I mean, he's coming on like this total lecher, and then there's a break, and all of a sudden they come back, and it's like now they're all lovey dovey and they're engaged, and she calls him her fiance, and it's like, whoa, wait a minute, when did all this happen? You know. Talk about a whirlwind romance. I'm going away for 3 months. Oh, I'll miss you. You know, it's like, wait a minute.
We don't have time.
Did they even go out on a date? They hardly even went out on a, they hardly even made it out on a date. You know, so it's like, unless you count the stuff, the time in the tank when they're training the creature.
yeah, that's their date. It's romantic.
I was always waiting for her when he started really.
I do love all her her costume changes. I think these are some of the best outfits. I love them so much. And you think that you can't beat Julie Adams and her swimsuit, her iconic white swimsuit.
Right,
but there
right.
are some beautiful swimsuits.
There's some great ones in here,
outfits for Lori Nelson. I do love that little striped one that she is wearing on the beach, kind of like a Barbie, a retro Barbie.
It's what it looked like, exactly. Yeah,
It really looks like Barbie's like first swimsuit. if you've ever looked at the original Barbie, but
I grew up with sisters, so very, very.
So that was a pretty iconic swimsuit, and then her whole outfits. I mean, she was so beautiful.
Oh my God! For like a graduate student.
Really, can't tell the difference between her and Ginger Rogers in any of them. They had such a similar figure. And, I mean, they were both very healthy, fit women. Mm-hmm. So you really can't tell. It's such a good body double.
She had a lot of money for a grad student or whatever. I think she was like a grad student.
In
this.
I mean,
boy, she had like
she
top fashion.
In the jingle. Yeah.
I think the one question I had in this question I had in this movie that just has plagued me for years, she and Cleet, Helen and Cleet, they go, they're heading to Jacksonville for this big romantic dinner, little dancing because he has to fly out for 3 months for something is going on.
Yeah.
So they go swimming, and of course the creature's there. We don't know it. And he does the little thing where he's playing with her feet like he did with Julie Adams. You know, the creature's really got a thing for these women, I'll tell you. And then they jump back on the boat, and the next thing, they're at the Lobster House in Jacksonville. When did they change, or where did they change? I mean, it was like, all of a sudden, they're all decked out to the nines. It's like,
doesn't matter.
They sneak into the restroom or something, or what? You know?
Yeah.
But what the heck, it's the movies.
Also, I'm curious how the creature got there so fast, but it's just,
was booking, wasn't he? I'll tell you, hand it to Riku. He was in great shape for this movie.
He is not normal, but that's okay. That's the creature.
Yeah, he was swimming. He was swimming at about 20 miles an hour, and he he picked up a couple of teenage guys and threw them against a tree. And I mean, this guy he tipped over a car. I mean, my God, he was in great shape. for a 5-pack-a-day cigarette smoker, he was in terrific shape.
He was rocking. Yeah.
There are some great moments in this film. There really are. I mean, it moves very quickly. It's a lot of fun. And so, you know, for the folks that say it was rushed, I don't know. You know, that didn't bother me as much. I just,
it doesn't really take a whole lot away. It's still an entertaining film. And I agree with you. It is not on the same caliber as Creature. I mean, the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah. Right.
But it's still very entertaining.
Absolutely.
Because Creature from the Black Lagoon was so unique and iconic, I feel like there was more time spent on storyline But it doesn't mean I don't enjoy this film.
So it's going to be interesting, you know, from this one, like you said, you know, they left it wide open. They were getting ready to do a third one, which we will talk about somewhere down the road, The Creature Walks Among Us, which it, as I am putting these in order, that one's probably my second favorite. And then this one's like my last favorite, but I still love them all. I mean, The Creature was always my favorite, you know, one of my favorite creatures. Yeah. I mean, it was such a cool creature.
I also like the costume, the suit much better than the original.
Yes.
This one, there are adjustments. The eyes, I would think, are obvious.
Eyes are very obvious, yeah. They did change them.
Right. And the head had to be adjusted for the, it had to be much larger, which you could see a lot of the bubbles just kind of rising out of the top of the kind of the forehead piece when Riku is down there, because there was like a little cavity up there because Riku was smaller. So the bubbles will emit from the costume, but the suit portion is essentially the same, and you can see like towards the end and then in different shots in the take, you can see it's really worn out. There are a couple rips. You can see in his thighs, and I mean that suit took a lot of abuse, but it took a beating. Oh, did you read about the sea turtle eating off his heel?
Oh, that was hilarious. Oh, it's not hilarious, but I mean, I know. It got his foot.
So
the prosthetic foot.
You just imagine Riku down there just like hanging out, and the sea turtle is like, "Oh, that looks delicious."
Yeah.
When I read that, I was like, wait, what? It ate his heel? And then I realized it was just the costume. I was like, wow, that is awful.
I didn't realize how much of that was a prosthetic. You know, that's how real that Riku makes this. Because I thought, are you kidding? I thought that was just like maybe a disguised flipper or something, but it was not. So, some of the extras in this film, you could tell they're having a blast in this movie, because you've got a lot of people attending Marine Land and stuff. And of course, there's some nice moments, like when you've got the big picture, you know, the big full size image of Ben Chapman dressed up as the creature that gets knocked over, and you know, the 3D image where it's getting knocked over.
Right. And I love that little, it's hilarious. Just a small moment, but when they first open the attraction and you have a couple and this woman just posing with that.
Yes.
The big cutout. and you see this boyfriend take a picture of her, and then you think, like, wow, times have not changed. We had just changed the device that everyone would have taken a photo in front of there, and there he is with his old school camera doing the same thing. And I was like, wow, people just, they never change.
You've got to have the scene of the mother with the little girl running away.
Oh, yeah.
And the little girl falls, and the mother just keeps on going.
I always
love that. The mother's just going until she hears the kid. It's like she would have kept going. The kid then comes, I guess I better get my kid.
That seemed like an ADR for the kid, because it did not sound like the little girl's voice.
I think it was.
Because it just didn't, it was too mature sounding. Yeah, so that to me comes off as an actor.
And of course, and I'm going to mention the folks of the Independent Life Insurance Company in Jacksonville, Florida. Most of the people you see at the park are them. So they went into this. I got a feeling it's the insurance company that may have insured the production. And they said, hey, come on, folks, you're going to be in the movie. So come on. So they. Most of those people were employees of that insurance company. Sounds like the Jacksonville, Florida people had as much fun with this movie as anybody else. It's great. And of course, then I don't know who the band was at the Lobster House. They were pretty good. there's just some fun moments, when they're in there and the creature decides, hey, where's the music coming from? Let's check this out. One of those scenes that are always fun.
He just knows where to go as well.
Yep.
But it's like, oh, I know where she lives. I know where they're going to party.
I know where they're going to be.
I know where they're going to take their boat.
Right.
He's so smart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of cliched stuff in here that has been copied in monster movies after this. The drummer looking up and sort of catching, double taking, you know, like, who is that? You know, and realizing what it is. There's some fun moments. Some really,
yes,
really fun things going on here. You got to watch this movie. Like Madeline said, you can watch it over and over and over again. And the only time you don't want to watch this movie is if you hear someone very loudly over a speaker go, stop! If you do that, then you got to stop watching, because it's a big part of this movie.
Yeah. I love how they used, what did they call it? They didn't call it a bull prod. They called it a bull rod.
A bull rod, yes.
Well, that's an electrical current running through water.
I was going to say, yeah.
They'd really also...
I even as a kid, I wondered about that. I said, wouldn't they all get shocked? You know,
yeah,
it seems like it would. You know, it would shock all the fish. And
that's right.
But
it's silly.
But suspend disbelief, yeah.
There's that one scene, I thought this was interesting, where kind of our early on in the film, an initial thing with, we've got both our divers and Riku in the suit. So it's all three of them were in that little scene together, all the characters that play.
Right, right.
What was it? John Lamb and Tom Hennessy and Riku.
Yeah.
Riku were in the tank at the same time, which that's like,
right,
I guess, the only time they ever did that. Kind of cool.
I think so, yeah.
And there are all sorts
it
of
was.
Different things. I love the shots of Lori looking in the tank, and how, and some of the camera work works so beautifully.
That was nice. Yeah.
Where Riku is just looking at her, and there's some
nice moments.
Really lovely moments, yes.
That's the kind of stuff that I think influenced movies like The Shape of Water, because it
right.
reminds me so much
it.
Of the scenes
you can
they
totally
had in that movie.
See.
Yep. Yep.
Yes. Totally. It's obviously going to be referenced forever. There are some beautiful
Absolutely.
Moments of creature and human there, and I'm sure everyone can relate to looking in the water at something that's alive and seeing it look back at you and having that moment with a creature. It's
right.
awesome.
I haven't mentioned him, but this is Jack Arnold. I mean, and the man, no matter what kind of material you give him, he just does an incredible job with it. I could spend a whole show just on his camera technique and the way he frames his story and tells it, the little thing of, you know, like the when they're looking for the dog, and I hate it whenever, you know, a dog gets injured in a movie or whatever, and they're out looking for the dog, and the hand comes in from off camera. I mean, he's got some really nice technique that gets you jumping.
Or
and
when
stuff.
when he grabs that bird.
Oh yes! Oh, that was great. Oh, it's one it, favorite.
I was like,
favorite
why
scene.
Is that bird just sitting there waiting to be attacked?
Just waiting to be fed.
Yeah,
that's a great scene.
Aaron or something. I'm not sure. I would have to look back at the beginning to see what bird it is. But
it's the kind of things the SPCA would never allow now. But you know, it made for good movies back then. Oh my God, I could go on and on and on about creature. We got to save some for Creature Walks Among Us.
Yeah,
because that's a film of a totally different ilk, and we'll have some fun with that one. Now, you guys have coming up in a couple of weeks from when this podcast is released, Silver Screen Spook Show is going to be doing a big monster movie. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, we are showing Gorgo on the 29th of June, and we have a matinee at 1:30, and our late show is at 10 p.m. Of course, we will do a spook show before showing the film, and it should be a great time. We love showing the big monster movies, and you did a podcast on this a while back.
Back in season one, it seems like a lifetime ago, but Mark and I, this is a favorite of ours, and I was trying to see if I could. It was episode 15.
Ooh,
remember? Boy, it was way back in the early days.
What episode is this one? We're way in.
We're on 177. But we may have to get together and do a Gorgo show. Maybe get the three of us. You know, that'd be fun. We've never done one with you, Mark, and me together. That'd be sort of fun.
So
there we go. The 29th. That's in Atlanta. So folks, if you're living in the Atlanta area or near the Atlanta area, it's worth the drive in to check it out. The Silver Screen Spook Show.
Yes,
on the 29th.
At the Historic Plaza Theater, the only independent theater in Atlanta.
It is such a fun place. Never been there. You've got to check it out. It's like going to the varsity. You know, you've just got it once in your lifetime. You got
an iconic place.
Well, Madeline, it has been too long. We both were sort of busy on this stretch, so we have to get our next one together sometime. If we don't do the creature one next, have you got anything in mind you'd like to talk about down the road?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about the Little Shop of Horrors, Roger Corman.
Yes.
I've got so many other ideas. It's actually the Ship of Monsters. This one
Ship
is
of Monsters.
So
I have to check it out. I'll have to check.
You
okay.
have to watch it. It
I'm going to have to check it out. I
amazing.
Don't think I've seen it.
Yeah. Okay, so it's a Mexican during the same time, 1960.
Beautiful.
And you'll have to watch it with subtitles. It is.
Oh, that's fine. I love that.
And it is so monumentally entertaining. I don't really want to tell you anything about it. You just have to watch it cold.
Okay, so we're gonna tease the audience here a little bit. We may do that one, Ship of Monsters,
yes.
or Little Shop. So, but at some point we will do them both. Because Little Shop I've been saving, so I'm glad that you brought
that one
up.
I would love to talk about that one. That's a great,
It is.
So
it's an
maybe
awesome
we'll
film.
Come next, but in the meantime, I give you some homework of finding the Ship of Monsters.
Yep, I'm gonna I've gotta go find that one.
All
right, well, Madeline,
so pleasantly surprised. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you guys have a lot of fun on the 29th. I'm going to try to get down there. I think I may actually be out of town that weekend because I'm hoping I'll be in New York. I'm trying to shoot for my New York trip and hide out on the Finger Lakes for a week. So I'm hoping I'll be able to be up there for the 4th of July this year, and that's the weekend I drive up. But we'll keep our fingers crossed. If not, I may see you guys down at the Plaza Theater. And, of course, I know we're going to be crossing paths at Monsterama. Again, folks, Revenge of the Creature, going to be shown by these guys at Monsterama. So don't forget that. It's the last weekend in September in Alpharetta, Georgia. So check it out. It's one of my favorite conventions. I love that convention.
My very favorite.
And we're going to be doing a panel. So you and me and Mark and Clay Sayer, we're all going to be doing a panel talking about monster movies. So, guys, it's almost going to be like Monster Attack Live. Check it out. All right, Madeline. Well, hey, thanks so much. I love it when you stop in. And we always have a great time.
Thank you so much for having me.
Looking forward to the next time. Anytime. You know you're always welcome here on Monster Attack. And, folks, we will see you next Monday for a whole new episode of Monster Attack. Have a great week.
Bizong!
It's Bizong, the Bizarre and Weird Fiction Podcast, hosted by me, Mr. Frank. Bizong is the showcase podcast of the bizarro fiction genre. And those who write weird and read weird are going to love this podcast, where each week we talk to everyone who is anyone in the bizarre and weird fiction realm. So join us here every Monday, presented exclusively by Project Entertainment Network.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.